Hello everyone, my name is Trevor Johns, and this is Android Developer Office Hours for the week of August 1st, 2012. This week's topic is smoothing out performance in Android UIs with our special guest, Roman Gee. Also with us today is Alex Lucas and Roman Nurek via video from New York. So, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we hold this show every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, and our goal is to answer your questions about Android app development. If you're watching live, feel free to hop onto our Google Plus Hangout, where you can ask us questions, either via video or if you don't have a webcam, audio and text questions are perfectly acceptable too. We also have a moderator page that we use to vote on questions beforehand. So we're going to go ahead and start by reading off the top of that list. And as we go along live, you guys are certainly welcome to vote on which questions you think we should answer next. So let's go ahead and get started. First question from the moderator queue. This is from Drew H. in Wheaton, Illinois. And he asks, our app is having issues with Hebrew text and vowel points rendering to the left of the center rather than directly below. Is this a bug with Skia? And is there something we can do in our app to fix this?
So I have an answer for that. It is kind of a bug in Skia, kind of a bug in the OpenGL pipeline, and kind of a bug in the framework. The issue, if that's interesting to you, is that we don't properly support, as of Jelly Bean, vertical positioning of glyphs with complex character sets. This is something we've been working on, and we already have fixed this issue internally, so a future version of Android will have much better support for that, and it should actually work in the next release of Android.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. So let's go ahead and move on to the next question then. So this one comes from Akil from Ashburn, Virginia, and he asks, why are objects and auto-unboxing not recommended? That's two questions, not the same. Why are objects not recommended? Why is auto-unboxing not recommended? And I'm not sure that's entirely accurate. So, Alex, I know we were talking about this beforehand.
Yeah.
Do you want to give a bit more feedback on, a bit more of an answer on this?
Okay, so to address them both individually, why objects are not recommended, it's not so much that we're saying don't use objects. It's the Java program. It's an object-oriented programming language.
Yeah, I mean, the Android framework itself is full of lots of objects. Objects are not in themselves a bad thing.
Right. What we're really going for is don't use objects gratuitously where you can do just as well with a primitive type. For instance, you can pretty easily replace enums with simple integers. That's just, you know, a static constant integer.
Right. And, yeah. So I mean, for those of you who don't know, if you do use an enum in object or in Java, that does get translated into a full fledged Java object, which is a lot of overhead for if all you want is something you can iterate over.
Right. And then if you have like a large collection of objects that each have like an enum property attached to them or something, that is another large collection of objects. If using enums instead of just normal integers, so we're really just saying don't use them. Don't use them gratuitously or excessively. For auto-boxing, it's more or less the same thing, because if you have like a large collection you're iterating over, and auto-boxing is going to create integer objects. Where just a normal integer would work fine, you're going to be creating objects on the fly in a loop, and it's going to be pretty wasteful and like slow things down a little bit and use up way more memory than necessary.
Right. So one or two auto-unboxings here and there, probably fine.
Right.
But you probably don't want to do it inside of a loop. Every time that loop goes through an iteration, you have another object created.
Yeah.
The
important thing to remember is that you should only avoid using objects and auto-boxing in performance-critical code paths. So in layout, draw, measure, if you have your own custom algorithm that needs to go fast. In a button listener, when you click on the button, it's okay to create an object because that's not going to happen very often. So it's up to you. Like, you understand your application and you know like what pieces of code are called very often, and this is where you have to be careful. And also, we offer you many APIs to avoid creating objects or to help you reuse objects. So for instance, we're talking about auto-boxing. Very often it comes from using integers inside a hash map, while instead you can use the sparse array classes we have that lets you avoid the auto-boxing and give you the same features and benefits of the hash map.
All right. So I think that's pretty well covered. So let's go ahead and move on to the next question. This one's coming from Martin S. in Northwest UK. He asks, what are the best tools for tracing performance issues? I have a slight pause when starting an activity, and I can't seem to track down the issue. Roman, you want to?
Yeah, so we have two tools that, three tools you can use in the SDK that you can use to track performance issues. The first one is called TraceView. TraceView lets you profile the Java code inside your application, and you can see how much time you spend in every method in your application. You can also use SysTrace that was introduced in Jelly Bean. The best I can recommend, if you want to know more about SysTrace, you should look at the Google I.O. video that we posted a couple weeks ago, where we present the tool a little bit. And you can also use the DDMS allocation tracker. If the performance issues comes from the garbage collector, then DDMS will help you figure out where you're allocating objects and why, and then you can fix that. In your particular case, because it happens when you start the activity, there are two things you can do. You can either go in the developer settings and set your application as the debuggable application, and then there's a checkbox you can turn on that tells the system to wait for a debugger before attaching. So you can basically let your application wait until you're ready to start debugging, and as soon as you're ready to start debugging, you can start TraceView, so you can capture the startup of your application. You can also use TraceView from code in android.os.debug. We have two methods, start method tracing and stop method tracing. So you can programmatically capture a trace that then you can open in TraceView. So if you just type in from the shell TraceView and then the path to the trace file, you can open it. And this is a really good way to capture only a very specific part of the lifecycle of your application. And this is actually something we do a lot internally. We use these methods to capture the startup of our apps and see where we're spending time.
Okay, thank you. So unless you have anything else to add on that, Alex, okay. I think we can move on to the next question then. So this question is from Viti, and I believe this was actually just voted up. So what parts of an application does the Jelly Bean application encryption protect? The developer changelog mentions application assets, and this is a bit unclear. Is it possible to disable this encryption for an application? So I don't think we actually have any experts on the encryption process here, so I'm not sure we can go into details to what's protected precisely. Mm-hmm. If somebody does know, feel free to jump in. But I mean, the overall goal is to make it so that once an APK has been sent to a device, it's not possible for a user to just go and casually copy that off of a device. The idea being, if you get an APK from Google Play, we don't want you to go and copy that onto some site where it doesn't belong. So exactly what is encrypted is less important than the fact that the APK can't be removed from the device if you're getting it through Google Play. Now, I'm actually not sure, but Rado, you might know this one. Do we use encryption even for free apps, correct?
Yes, I think that's right.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So for anything you're getting through Google Play, it is going to be encrypted. That said, if you really do want to go and distribute your app in a way that is unencrypted, you're always welcome as the application developer to go ahead and publish the APK to a website. APKs that are produced through the Android development tools are not encrypted. The encryption is a side effect of loading them on through an application store such as Google Play. So users will still be able to sideload your application if you choose to publish it, and then encryption isn't an issue. All right. So I think that covers that one. So let's move on to the next question. So my tab was locked right there. All right. So this one's coming from Michael. What's the best way to draw large images? I receive an 800 by 600 JPEG with 8 to 15 frames per second. Currently, I create a bitmap with Bitmap Factory and draw in the onDraw method with canvas.drawBitmap. I added zooming and panning, but it doesn't feel smooth. Is there a better way to go about doing this?
So there's no simple answer to this question, and as often with performance questions, the real answer is it depends. So the question is a little too vague to give you a real answer. So for instance, are you applying color filters to that bitmap? Are you using alpha? Are you scaling the bitmap? Are you decoding the bitmap in the onDraw method, in which case that would be a big no-no? On what kind of device are you running? Are you using hardware acceleration? So without having an answer to all those questions, I cannot really help you. The best I can tell you is to use TraceView, so profile your application, use TraceView to see where you're spending your time, because maybe you're not spending your time in draw bitmap, maybe it's somewhere else. And without knowing more about the app, it's really difficult. But you should be able to draw such a bitmap. Like, this is not a big bitmap, and actually the size of the bitmap doesn't really matter as long as you're not scaling it down to a very tiny size. So there must be something else going on in your application.
All right. So our next question comes from a mysteriously named person named X.
Actually, I've got a live question from the Hangout. I'm going to put him on air.
Excellent. Sure. Yes, let's go ahead and we'll get to X's question in just a moment. So, hey, Roman.
Yes, I had a question on... I'm trying to stay up to date on the ADK tools and SDK tools when the new versions come out. For example, I saw last week there was a 20.0.1 released, and it's not listed in the news of the tool site, the developer site. What's the best way to keep up to date with what has been released?
Okay. So as far as the major releases, we definitely announced those both on the Android developer site, developer.android.com, right, as well as the Android developer blog. Now, it's always possible that we'll release a minor release. So, for example, you know, 20.1 or 20.1, you know, .1, so, right, you know, depending on the extent of the release. And we usually don't announce those because there's really nothing really noteworthy about them. It's probably some minor bug that was found that, for whatever reason, was considered important enough to merit a fix.
Okay.
So usually the best way is just to periodically run the SDK manager, and then it'll go and flag those updates automatically. Of course, besides the stuff that's released as part of Android open source and from Google, there's a lot of other companies that can release add-ons as well. You know, there's someone there from Intel, from Samsung, from HTC. So there's a lot of sources to keep track of. Definitely, you do want to keep track of the stuff from Android.
I've been running on the SDK manager, but it wasn't showing up on there. And then I closed it out, rebooted, turned back on, I found it, and I've since then disabled caching. See if I don't know if that's going to do anything. And not cache what's out there, but we'll see.
Yeah, there is a refresh option in the file menu. It's possible there was some cached data locally that was causing a problem. It will eventually pick up those changes, though. So, if you just launch it periodically, that's probably the best way to watch out for those really smaller releases, both and from Google and everyone else.
Do we announce the minor releases on the Twitter account and the Google Plus accounts that we have for Android developers?
Not usually. Unless we notice a really big bug, then we might mention something. Okay. But if it's just a routine patch to to one of the existing major releases.
Right, so I saw the previews for 20 were coming out. Yeah, the preview 1, 2, and 3, and that was nice. But then 20.1 is like, okay, you changed the build XML file. It kind of affects what I'm doing. So.
Yeah, that said, I definitely hear what you're saying there, that maybe we should advertise these a bit more. So I'll pass that along to the rest of the team.
Okay.
And maybe we can just post something to Google Plus. Probably doesn't warrant a full blog post if it's just a one-line change. But Google Plus is probably a pretty good medium for that. So actually, Radio's right here. He manages our Google Plus account, so he probably consider the feature request filed.
Yeah. There we go. Thanks.
All right. So let's go ahead and now go on to X's question.
But before you start, I should point out that Michael, whose question Ramon sort of answered generally, if he's listening to the Hangout or if he's on. Michael, feel free to just pop into a Hangout and give us more specific information, and we might be able to give you a more specific answer.
Yes, and that applies to everyone here. Yeah. If we're answering your question, we'd certainly love to see you online. And again, even if your question's not on the moderator queue, you're certainly welcome to hop on and ask us a question live.
Right.
All right. So next question here. And this one's targeted directly to Ramon. So. X asks, with ICS, Diane mentioned you did some selective enabling and disabling of hardware acceleration for the Nexus S. How, if at all, did the butter optimization story change with Nexus S? Are there any additional performance tips for lower-end devices running Android 4.1 or above?
So Project Butter and Jelly Bean didn't change much for Nexus S. The main reason why we disabled the hardware acceleration in some... not even some apps, it was some parts of the system. For instance, I believe that it was disabled in the status bar and the keyboard. We did that mostly to save RAM. The Nexus S doesn't have that much RAM compared to other devices, and on that particular device, every time we bring up the OpenGL driver in an app, it takes about 6 to 8 megs of RAM. So when you multiply that by the number of processes we have, it starts getting very costly. We did a lot of changes in the system where we tried to be very aggressive about releasing the memory, especially the memory used by the GPU. But in places like the keyboard where we don't need to redraw at 60 FPS, like we just redraw when you type a key, it wasn't worth it to enable hardware acceleration. And actually, I think the keyboard might be using software rendering even on Nexus 7 or Galaxy Nexus. That's pretty much all there is to it. So performance tip for lower-end devices, I would say watch memory usage. Usually the power of those devices scales down with the size of the screen, so you don't have to worry too much about graphics performance because you're drawing less. So it's really about how much memory you're using. And again, I cannot really answer that question without more specific details.
All right. And then once again, if you are watching live, feel free to hop on and give us some more details. So moving on, next question is from Mandalu in Palo Alto. And the question is, what's the best way to have low latency touch in games using GL Surface View? Should I register choreographer.postframeCallback and then consume all motion events I've received in the activity thread at that point? I'm guessing this is going to be another question for Oman.
Yes. So that's actually the way you should probably do it. It's actually the way the UI itself works. We synchronize the drawing on VSync, and at the beginning of the frame, we process all the events that we've accumulated since the last time we drew. So this is very similar with what we do in the UI. What might happen, though, in your particular case is you might get one extra frame of latency because you will have to request a render on the GL Surface View thread. And if you want that render to be synchronized with the VSync, you'll have to postpone it to the next frame. And this is one of the reasons why, for instance, we haven't tried to do to move the rendering off to a separate thread in the UI toolkit, is because we can add an extra frame of latency. So you can give it a try, see if it helps. And if it's noticeable, then let us know. We can try to think of other ways of doing it. Maybe we can add APIs to make it easier for you guys to do that kind of things. And if it's not noticeable at all, then by all means, do that. And that's what Choreographer is for.
Okay, excellent.
Hey, Trevor, I've got a question from the Hangout.
Sure.
From someone who left, but I'm going to ask it for you guys anyways.
Sure, go right ahead.
Question is, I've seen some apps use a sideways action bar. Is this recommended? It feels like it might offer some extra or better functionality.
Okay, so a sideways action bar, I imagine, is literally an action bar that's oriented vertically along the sides of the screen.
I think that's what we see in Evernote.
Right, that's what I was thinking as well, too. So I think the answer there is it's not a recommended pattern at this time. We do go and periodically revise our UI guidelines, so at some point in the future, we may or may not decide that that's a good idea. But right now, the official recommendation for action bars is either one action bar at the top or the split action bar, where you have an action bar on the top and the bottom. So, and then, of course, you can do things like throw tabs and everything else in there, too. This is very similar to a question we've got in past weeks, too, about some apps like Google Play, I believe, does this, YouTube does this, Google Plus, where when you tap the up button, it'll cause an additional fragment to slide out from the side of the screen with navigation links. And our answer there was the same, that we're evaluating it. If you are ambitious and want to go and try new UI paradigms, it's always something you can consider placing into your app. But right now, it's not an official recommendation, and you're actually going to have to add quite a bit of code to make that work, too, because there's no libraries that go and render that for you. So
not discouraged, but not recommended.
Right. I mean, with all UI things, all things involving UI, our guidelines are just that. They're intended to help guide you towards what the correct solution is, but by no means there are hard rules. In the end, the question is really what makes your application provide the best user experience, which is something that you have to look at the big picture, right? Does it blend in with the system? Does it make sense? Is it intuitive? Does it look nice? All of these things are things that you need to consider as a UI designer. So, and actually, we have Roman on the other end. Roman, do you want to go and provide any more feedback about this?
First, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. So the person that asked this question is actually back on. Akil is here. Akil, do you want to you know, kind of elaborate on your question live?
I just think that I use the contextual action bar on the top and the bottom, like on the bottom, but it seems like that it would get in the way. I'm writing a notes app, so it seems like that would get in the way of the, like, the actual writing with the palm rest and stuff. It's gotten in the way when I've used it. So I just figured that if I put like a sideways action bar, it might actually help. But
yeah, so I think in some apps, especially in apps that require interesting interactions that aren't just, you know, single touches or you know, basic gestures, things that, you know, sometimes require the full screen, like drawing, if it's something complex like that, then you shouldn't feel limited by your patterns. You know, if you want to have actions along the side, you know, it may make sense. One of the things to watch out for, though, is to get a kind of establish a balance between what looks like system stuff and what looks like custom app stuff. If you make, and this is potentially kind of unintuitive, but if you make something that tries to resemble the system graphics too much, it may feel a little out of place. Whereas, you know, if you have something that's kind of potentially styled in your own way and it's a sideways action bar, it may make more sense. So I think that it can work, and in a lot of cases, the interaction is correct there. It's probably better than having things along the top and bottom, but it's definitely something that requires some special thought just to figure out, you know, what's the right balance between, you know, established patterns and what's really intuitive and useful for the user.
Yeah, I'll probably keep it with the normal system UI if I end up doing it, just to avoid, like, confusion for the user.
Another thing to think about is, you know, you can always show and hide things. So one of the things that happens in video playback, for example, is that all the controls, the system bar, the action bar, the status bar, all of that stuff can go away with a single tap. And actually, there were some new APIs in Jelly Bean which made this very easy and made the layout very consistent and stable, actually. I think that's the name of the API. Stable across changes to visibility of things like that, so you may want to consider doing that as well.
So lights out mode, like I think that's what it's called. Like that's only available in Jelly Bean, or
no? So lights out mode is actually available with Honeycomb and later. But Jelly Bean introduced some new things for devices like the Galaxy Nexus and the Nexus 7 that have navigation bar at the bottom and top. They introduced some new APIs to make your layout work even better with that. So it's also the Set System UI Visibility API, but there's some new flags in there that make it even better. So I look into that.
Okay, thanks.
One thing I would also note is, like, as Ramon mentioned, if you have a vertical action bar, it's going to be handedness might become an issue, because if you're left-handed and it's along the left-hand side of the screen, like, your palm is naturally going to fall on it a lot. So I would say, like, if it's going to actually, handedness in general becomes an issue with vertical action bars in touchscreen interfaces. So I would say at least have the option of moving it to the other side of the screen.
Or leave it at the top because you don't put your hand there.
Or stick with the top because your hand won't, like, you don't rest your hand on the top of the screen.
Yeah, and you also have to keep in mind too, you do have the system bar at the bottom, which has the home button, and so if your UI is likely to touch an action bar at the bottom of the screen, it's just as likely to touch that system bar as well, too. So, and unfortunately, you don't really have the option of moving that. So that's something you have to be aware of as well. All right. So do we have any other live questions, or should we go back to the moderator? All right. So back to the moderator it is. So the next question comes from Monzo. Oh, actually, the next question is... My battery is dead. I have the next question. So the question is, person was looking at intent service and noticed that the intent service code was creating a handler and setting the priority for the thread to normal instead of background priority. And so the question was, what's the recommended approach for background services? And I think as a side question, is that a bug? So, at least on my end, I was taking a look through the source code earlier, and I didn't actually notice any calls to go and set the priority within intentService.java. So I'm a little curious where in our code you saw that behavior. But as far as what the recommended practice is, Ramon, do you want to go and provide some detail there?
I think the recommended value, you know, by default, using the default value is exactly what you want. and we give higher priority to for instance, if there's a UI in the foreground that the user is interacting with, our scheduler will give priority to that. So you don't necessarily need a priority background to get a lower priority than what's happening in the foreground. I'm not very familiar with intent services, so I'm not sure what their priority should be, if it should be background or default or anything else. But I would say that, you know, given that, that Diane wrote that code, whatever the whatever's the default priority is probably like what she meant it to be. But of course, we should ask her just in case and see if there's maybe a bug there. I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Okay, awesome. All right. So sadly, I can't find a charger anywhere here. So yeah, let's do this. I'm gonna read off your laptop. So the next question is, with the voice search app on the Nexus S, it seems like the UI animation interface can't keep up with the audio input and response. So jank. Do you have any insight as to the most likely cause or tips on how we can avoid the same pitfalls? And this is from an anonymous user.
Okay, so I will be annoying with my answer again. So once again, without knowing more about exactly what's going on inside the app, it's very hard to give tips. And I don't quite understand when this jank is happening, but I guess it is something like if you're... Do we have real-time answers in voice search? Like, as you speak, do we give you a real-time...
Yes. On newer versions. If you're running Android 4. I want to say either 4.0 or 4.1. I think it was 4.0. So that's Ice Cream Sandwich. We added real-time voice transcription.
Okay. Well, because, I mean, there can be several levels of jankiness here. It could be the UI because, you know, the animations are too complicated, or it's too much work for the system, or maybe it's just the time it takes for the audio to be sent to our servers, processed, and sent back. So I'm not quite sure what part of the UI is incorrect here. If the person who has the question can join the Hangout and give us more details about exactly what's going on or what they're experiencing, then maybe we can try to answer the question. But as always, I would say, you know, use TraceView. You can use TraceView on any app, and you can see what's going on and not do that in your applications. And if this is a real problem, we should talk to the people working on the voice search application.
Okay, great. So I now have questions again on my phone. My house has been without power for the last couple of days. I managed to blow a fuse, and my tablet has not charged in a couple of days. The fact that it's lasted this long is actually really impressive. But anyway, moving back to the questions. So this one comes from Vitaly in Albany, New York. And the question is, what's the benefits of using an intent service over a ThreadPool executor for network requests? Are there any downsides to using the ThreadPool executor? We found that the intent service was taking about 10 milliseconds to start and handle an intent. Is that correct? I'm not hearing anything from Roman, so I'm not sure he has an answer for this one.
Well, I'm trying to remember. Isn't intent service running into a separate process?
Intent service actually does create a service, which may or may not create a separate process, but it does create a separate task.
Okay.
So, depending on what the settings for your app are.
Because if there is actually a 10 millisecond delay, it might just be like the inter-process communication. But I believe that the whole point of an intern service is to get, is that the lifecycle is managed by the system, so you don't get killed.
Right. Well, I mean, even within the same process, activities and services normally should use inter-process communication to communicate anyway, because there's no guarantee that service... it hasn't been reconfigured to go and start in a different process. So it's still probably going through Binder and all of that fun stuff.
I mean, the difference here between using a thread pool and an intent service is whether or not you want those requests to happen when the app is in the background. Because with a service, your app might live longer in the background and not get killed, so you can still execute things on in your intent service. Whereas if you're using a thread pool executor and you're not moving that into your own service, then it's more likely to be killed. So if you want to wake up your app, you know, every few minutes or every half an hour to make a network request, you'd be better off using the intern service or your own service. You can write your own service with a thread pool executor inside. It's just the intern service is a convenient way of doing it. But thread pool executor is just a low-level API. It's a great way to do threading. There's nothing wrong with it as long as you know how to use it. And I know from experience that it's hard.
All right. So the next question is coming from Jason. And Jason asks, Will anybody update WebView to support HTML5 video?
Yes, we have in Honeycomb. So as of Honeycomb, if your application is hardware accelerated, you get full HTML5 video support. So make sure your app is either using the target SDK 14 or you're using the use hardware accelerated equals true attribute in your manifest, and then you will get HTML5 video support.
Ah, excellent. Awesome. Now, see, I thought it actually hadn't even been implemented yet, so that's great news.
Our framework team is so fast, they'll take a feature request, go back in time, and implement it.
It's true. Exactly. Maybe they fixed the TARDIS. Yeah, it's right there behind me, for those of you who can't see. Our TARDIS is broken. So normally, questions like this, we actually can't answer, because we can't talk about the roadmap for Android, until things get released, at least. But when things are already implemented, that's awesome. So glad we can help you with that. So let's move on to the next question here. This is
Trevor, I've actually got a question from the Hangout.
Excellent. More Hangout questions.
Cool.
Go ahead.
So the question is actually regarding Hebrew. It's supposed to have been fixed as of the current version of Android, but it's going to be a while before OEMs actually start introducing this latest version. So it could take up to, quote unquote, 2 years before it's out there in the wild. Are there any fixes for this issue that we that developers can implement right now?
Not easily. I mean, you would have to take a library like Halfbuzz, which was what we use to shape complex scripts, and then you would have to do your own text rendering to be able to position the glyphs properly. So Skia, on the Canvas API, we have a method called drawPassText that helps a little bit, but it's a little broken for languages like Hebrew. So it would be actually pretty difficult to do on your own. And I would not recommend doing it yourself because it's a lot of work and it's easy to get it wrong. So I wish, I had a better answer for you, and I wish I could tell you that it's been supported since 1.0, but unfortunately our answer is it's going to be in a future version of Android.
Okay, great. So next question is coming from Simon M. Nancy from France. Either that or the city of Nancy, France. I'm pretty sure it's Simon M. Nancy. So, Simon.
Nancy is a city in France.
There's a Nancy, France. Okay. Yes. So, yeah, Nancy is a strange last name. All right. So, Simon, he asks, is there a way to attach a kind of selector, like a stateless drawable, to a text view in order to update the text shadow attributes with touches, clicks, focus, etc.?
No, you cannot. You can only change the text color and the drawables in the text view if you have drawables, but you cannot change the shadow. So what you can do, though, is you can overwrite text view, and then there's a method, I believe, called drawable state changed. It's a protected method you can override that will be invoked every time the state of the view changes, and that state needs to be propagated to the drawable. So, for instance, the view goes from press state to non-press state or gets to focus state, things like that. And from there, you can go change yourself the text shadow attributes. I have to admit that this is not something that we thought would be useful. And I'll think about it, see if we should add that to the framework. But, it seems to be, it will be probably be low on our list of priorities if we do add it.
Okay, great. So next question here. This is from Harish from Burke, wherever that is. And he asks, when I run my app in Jelly Bean using the Eclipse simulator, I get a warning saying choreographer skipped 2001 frames. The application may be doing too much work on its main thread. How can I overcome this? How do